Morning, everyone. So this is lecture 10 of the Machine Learning for Many Body Physics course. And so far in this course, we've been talking about various classical machine learning methods that can help us to learn about many body systems. And today, in today's lecture, I just want to give an overview of how we can incorporate quantum into what we have seen so far. So looking at kind of the intersection of quantum and machine learning, because so far we've been using classical methods and we've also been studying classical systems so far. And so, you know, studying how we incorporate quantum, of course, could be a whole course on its own. So I'm really just going to give you a quick overview of that. And then just to remind you of what's coming next week, we're going to have three different guest lectures next week. So first on Monday, we're going to have a lecture on ethics and how we think about that when developing quantum technology. That's by Joan Arrow and Sarah Marsh from the Quantum Ethics Project. So that one's on Monday. And again, let me just remind you that if you want to attend on Zoom, you have to fill out the pre-registration form, which is in the calendar invite. It's in the email that you got. And I'll send another email when I send out the next homework as well. And then on Tuesday, we have a lecture by your TA Muhammad on generative modeling. Just note that one's at a different time than usual. It's at 11:30. And then on Thursday, we're going to have a lecture by Roger Melko about kind of the frontiers of physics and machine learning and kind of just an overview of a lot of different research that's gone on. I think he's going to talk about research that's done by perimeter researchers over the last few years in this field. Let me also just say, I know sometimes in this class we're starting a few minutes after 9, that's okay, but if you can make an effort to maybe be just like on time or even 1 or 2 minutes early for the guest lecturers, I know it's just kind of nice for them if we can actually start on time and they see people here. But so if possible, that would be really great. And the first homework was due on Tuesday. The next one, I'm going to post the first question of it probably today. And there'll be another question added to that one after early next week. And after I post the second question, you'll still have a week to submit. But you're already able to do the first question, so I figured I'll post it before the weekend in case you want to get that one done. Okay, so before I move in to this idea of incorporating quantum into what we've seen, let me just kind of summarize what we've seen so far in this course. So until today, we've been talking about classical machine learning methods. You may remember that we talked about how these can fall into three different categories: supervised learning, unsupervised learning, and reinforcement learning. Although we didn't cover reinforcement learning, but just for completeness, let me mention it in the chart. So we started in this course by talking about supervised learning. We've applied supervised learning methods to various data sets from many-body physics, classical many-body physics so far. So the first thing we talked about was linear regression. We studied this in lecture and also in tutorial. We talked about this only briefly, but I'll just mention it. We did kind of outline another algorithm that we didn't code, but we just talked about how it works, this k-nearest neighbors, very simple supervised learning method. Of course, I'm not listing everything, so there's many others that maybe I said the name of, but we didn't talk about in detail. But then we spent a lot of time talking about fully connected feed-forward neural networks. So this what we talked about that for several lectures. We did a tutorial on this, and you thought about this in homework 1. And then we talked about also convolutional neural networks and we used them in a tutorial to study this icing lattice gauge theory. So that just kind of shows you everything we saw for supervised learning. Let me just move this bubble over a bit. And then for unsupervised learning, does anyone want to remind me does anyone want to say what were some of the algorithms or classes of tasks we looked at for unsupervised learning? Yes, perfect. Yeah, so dimensional reduction was one we spent a lot of time on. So this was that was our tutorial on Tuesday, and we had two lectures, and the homework problem that you'll be doing related to this is using this TSNE algorithm. Applied to, I think it's going to be the same data set that you used in the tutorial 5. And then the other class, which again, it's a really big topic and we've really only started to touch on it, is generative modeling. So we talked about this briefly yesterday. I told you some main ideas about KL divergence, maximum likelihood estimation. Mohamed's also going to tell you a bit more about generative modeling in lecture 12. Roger is, I'm sure, going to show you some results based on generative modeling. And there's going to be a week-long course, May 8th to 12th, that I'll be sending out the details about that soon. But there'll be more on generative modeling within that course for anyone who's interested. Okay, any questions about anything in the course that we've seen so far up to this point? Or anything that's coming next week? Okay, so again, because I think you might be hearing a lot about kind of this intersection of quantum and machine learning, I want to make sure we talk about the different ways that quantum can be incorporated into what we've seen so far. So I can't remember when it was, but at one point somebody asked a question about how quantum can be incorporated. And so how do we incorporate quantum into what we've seen so far? Well, there's kind of two main ways that you can think about this. So you may have heard people talk about quantum machine learning. And what I'm drawing in this bubble is actually more general than that. I'm saying quantum and machine learning. Because when people say quantum machine learning, I mean, I don't know that it's always so rigorously defined, but they tend to refer to something a bit more specific when they say quantum machine learning. But there's different ways we can look at the intersection of quantum and machine learning. So the first thing we can do is look at machine learning with data from quantum systems. So this could be a lot of the same algorithms that we've already seen, and the data will just come from a different source or maybe need to be interpreted in a different way. The other thing we can look at is machine learning where the actual device where you do the learning is quantum, so machine learning with quantum processing devices. And this is not always, but at least typically, what people mean when they say quantum machine learning. Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to tell you, we'll mostly talk about the second point, but I'll first tell you a little bit about the first point as well. And again, just to restate, like either of these could be a whole entire course, so this is really just a very, very quick overview. Okay, so let's first talk about machine learning with data from quantum systems. A really great paper you can look at to have more of an overview on this topic is this archive paper by Juan Carrasquilla and Giacomo Torlai, both of whom used to work at Perimeter. But the idea in this category is that we can still use classical and machine learning methods, and including many that we saw in this course, or some that would fall into this generative modeling category that maybe Mohammed will talk about or will be covered in May. So we can use some of these classical methods to study properties of quantum systems. So let me just give you a few examples of this. So in this course, we've seen a lot about how we can use machine learning to identify phase transitions. We could also extend this to study quantum phase transitions. So we've so far studied the classical Ising model, the classical Ising lattice gauge theory. But of course, we can extend this to quantum systems. Of course, we have to consider how the data might change if we're considering a different type of system. So in this case, the training data, we don't have access to the state of our system, so we often have to do several projective measurements, and that might serve as our data. Okay. So another example we can talk about in this category is quantum state tomography. Does anyone know what that means? Or what do you think of when you hear that? Yeah?
We're trying to reconstruct a quantum state by repeatedly performing measurements on like a bunch of identically prepared copies.
Right. So based on measurements, try to figure out what the state was. Were you going to say anything?
You can also do measurements in different bases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, different types of measurements, but with the goal of reconstructing the state that we have. So we might know that we're measuring the same state over and over again, but we might not know what this state is. And of course, the number of measurements we have is probably limited, so we need sophisticated methods and strategies in order to do this reconstruction. So generative modeling is often used for this task. So generative modeling that has some neural networks underlying the structure of the algorithm. So an example is it that has been done within Roger Malko's group, for example. They've done some of this with restricted Boltzmann machines. And that's not the only example, but that's just one of the earlier ones that was done in this category. So it's been shown that these type of architectures can be used and they can be trained to learn from this measurement data and then produce an efficient neural network representation of your state. So if you remember in generative modeling, we're trying to train our algorithm to learn this quantum state in terms of some kind of model parameters. So in some cases, they might be stored within a neural network. Okay, and the last one that I'll talk about is that we could use machine learning to search for ground states of quantum systems. So this is something that Mohammed knows a lot about. I don't know if he's going to have time in his lecture to go into it, but if he doesn't, you can definitely ask him a lot about this or look up his papers. He's done a lot of great work on this. So the idea is that you're given a Hamiltonian of a quantum many-body system. And you can train a generative model to approximate the ground state of that system. So Mohammed has worked a lot on this with specifically with recurrent neural networks. Okay, so of course this is not an extensive list by any means, but these are just a few examples of what you can think about when all we change is the type of data that we're looking at. These are some examples of what you might explore. So any questions before we talk about the other kind of bubble up there, which is quantum machine learning? Okay, so quantum machine learning, you might sometimes be referred to as quantum-assisted machine learning or quantum-enhanced machine learning. So this is a field I don't specifically do work in, so I had to, read many references to be able to feel like I could give some kind of an overview. But there are some great references that I'll refer you to because I'm definitely not going to be covering even close to everything within this field. So there's a great textbook called Machine Learning with Quantum Computers. These are also linked on the portal, but I'll just say them. So Maria Schuld, she is one of the authors, and she also gave a really nice tutorial at NeurIPS with Juan Carrasquilla at a couple of years ago, so I'll mention that too. And again, it's linked on the portal. And we'll study an example of doing quantum machine learning with a quantum simulator in our last tutorial, which will be next Tuesday. So the goal of this field is really to figure out how we can use quantum computers or quantum devices to help with machine learning tasks. And by help with, you know, we might want to speed up something, or we might want to look at a problem in a new, innovative way. And so quantum computers offer us a whole new set of ways of doing this. Let me just note that usually we're still referring to classical data in this case. So in this category, unlike the previous one where we were considering data, it doesn't have to be the case, but usually it's going to refer to cases where the device is quantum, but you still are looking at classical data. And there's many different algorithms you could consider for doing that. We're going to look at one specific example. So we're specifically going to look at variational circuits for now. Let me just interrupt me if there's a question. And people are even exploring using near-term quantum devices within these variational circuits. So some of the applications are not so far down the road. Okay, so the setup of a variational circuit. As you might tell from the title, these models are based on quantum circuits. And similar to in the methods we've seen so far, where we have some parameters that we want to adjust, in these models, we're going to have some set of parameters that we'll denote by theta that we're going to want to adjust to train our model. So, one thing we can imagine doing is we might want to apply a unitary transformation to some input that we have and maybe our input is n qubits. So we could write this mathematically as just, you know, applying u to our state. But we can also draw this in circuit notation. This u of theta is some large gate that we want to apply. So we have our in and our out applying this gate. And I know maybe not all of you are taking quantum information, so let me know if there's any questions that come up about this notation. So, you know, we could think about this as just applying one gate, but often, as we've seen in machine learning, we want to kind of have various inputs that we could feed in. So far, I've just showed you feeding in all zeros. So we can also think of first doing an operation to kind of encode our data into the format that we want, and then doing the processing on it through some unitary that depends on these thetas. The difference is that encoding our data would not depend on tunable parameters. So. Then all I'm saying here is that the same as what I had before, but I can actually think of this u theta. It'll now depend on some set of parameters x that encode my data. So, you know, this could be many parameters needed to do this encoding, but it's not something that I'm trying to learn how to do. And then after that, I would process the data. So then this might look like this. Sorry, this should be a W. So So for example, if we wanted to encode some string configuration, we would need to do some kind of an operation through this to be able to have some up and down spins represented as input to this W that we then tune. And for practical purposes, it's actually more common that rather than applying and tuning such big gates that act on N operations, we usually decompose these into much smaller gates. So often, we'll actually decompose these problems into one or two qubit gates. And in that case, for the W gate, for example, rather than just having this big n qubit gate that depends on all these theta parameters, maybe we're going to actually write this as a series of smaller gates that depend on smaller numbers of parameters. So then there's many things we can think about. You know, there's every gate could depend on a different number of parameters, and it could also take different amounts of input. So the way I design this would be like the ansatz for the quantum circuit that I'm designing. And then again, the goal is to tune these different theta parameters. And I can think of something similar for the encoding matrix, although there the parameters are not things that I'm going to learn and tune. OK, so I'm going to erase a board, but just let me know if there's any questions while I do that. Any questions so far about anything? Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about kind of the overall idea of how you might train some of these models. When we do training, we need some notion of a cost function. So what we'll need to do that makes this different from the classical algorithms that we've seen is that after we've applied all of these gates, we'll need to apply a measurement, a series of measurements at the end. And then we have to find different ways of using these measurements in order to define our cost function. But, you know, unlike in classical machine learning, if I use the very same gate here and I start with the same zero input here, I don't change x, I don't change theta, of course I can get different measurement outcomes at the end. So there's kind of different options for what we can do at the end. So, but often, we're going to be looking at algorithms where the outcome or the label that we have for our supervised learning problem should be deterministic. It should be that we always put in some input and get the same output. So in this case, we would need to do some kind of averaging or expectation value in order to get a function that we can fit to our labels. But you also could consider cases where you don't average the measurements. And then you're going to get some kind of probabilistic distribution of outputs at the end. And you might remember that in unsupervised learning, we're often talking about probability distributions. So the distribution that we get there could be, you know, just directly used without doing any kind of averaging or expectation value. We could use that within some of these generative modeling algorithms, for example. But you also might have cases in supervised learning, which we haven't talked about at all so far, but you could have probabilistic supervised learning problems where instead of saying that every time you feed in x, you get y, maybe you know that if you feed in x, you have some probability of getting this label, a probability of getting another label. So you could also imagine scenarios here where we could just directly use a probabilistic outcome for either supervised or unsupervised learning, depending on the problem. OK, so now I want to briefly talk about training these models. But again, because I'm just trying to give an overview in a short amount of time, I'm going to just kind of say a few key words, because there's maybe just some words that you hear about when you talk about quantum machine learning. So I'm just really trying to give you a sense of where they fit in. So let me just tell you a few key points that come up in these training algorithms. And then what I want to do for the last couple of minutes is just show you a really great online resource that you might use to continue learning about some of these things. So what it means to train is that we're trying to find, in this case, the parameters we're trying to optimize are these theta parameters. And we want to find the ones that minimize the cost. So, you know, this is similar to finding the weights and biases in our neural networks. And, you know, we're still going to search at some point in these algorithms. There's going to come in an element of something like gradient descent. Okay, so you may recall, you know, we saw that in feed-forward neural networks, in order to do this training and minimize this cost function, we need to know gradients of our cost function. In feed-forward neural networks, we needed to introduce this idea of backpropagation to figure out how to calculate those. So calculating gradients is not always a straightforward thing to do. So in these cases, let me just tell you of a few things that tend to come up that are really active research areas. So, it's common to, when you need to find the gradients of these gates with respect to these theta parameters, finite difference methods or parameter shift rules are often going to be talked about. So, yeah, we don't really have time to go into these things, but I just, because these might be words that you've heard about, if you're starting to read this kind of literature, I want to mention them. And I am going to show you a really great resource where they have really great pages where they have just a pretty short page just on parameter shift rules. It's kind of like a Wikipedia for quantum machine learning. So you can go and read about these kinds of things. So in these variational circuits, something that tends to be a really big problem is something called Barron plateaus. And these are just regions in the parameter space where the gradients are close to zero. So let me just emphasize that figuring out how to compute these gradients for various kinds of variational circuits is a very active area of research, and figuring out how to, for example, understand these Barron plateaus is something that you'll find a lot of papers on. So if it's something you find interesting, you can, it's an area you could consider getting involved in. So any questions? I know this is a really, really quick overview, so I know there might be questions about some of these concepts, but Anything you want to ask about?
Aren't there also quadratic speedups for algorithms for like linear algebra computations and stuff using quantum systems? So, and like since machine learning is a lot of linear algebra, can you like speed up as well?
So machine learning does a lot of linear algebra, yeah. And so you're saying, can you speed up? Oh, that's a good question. That wouldn't even have to necessarily be like quantum machine learning, just machine learning in general. I'm trying to think how, maybe like by smartly learning when an area is sparse or something and you don't need, I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to think like, what would it mean to like learn to do that in a more efficient way? It's definitely possible. I don't know of like, maybe someone else in the room knows of something that's been done in that area. I don't know about it, but I mean, it sounds like a possibility for sure. Okay, so let me, unless there are other questions, I can definitely talk about anything else that is on your mind, but so far in this course, we've been using some specific libraries to do our programming, and of course we're going to need to look at some new options if we want to program these quantum machine libraries. So the one that we're going to see is developed by Xanadu, and it's this Penny Lane library. So we'll use that in tutorial 6. But there's also one developed for TensorFlow, TensorFlow Quantum, and there's one for Julia called Yao. These codes will be set up to run code on quantum simulators in some cases, and sometimes on actual quantum devices. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's obvious, but for me, when I started looking at these libraries, I was sometimes confused about, okay, when is it actually using a quantum device and when is it not? So in lots of cases, it's just using a simulator, but then sometimes you can specifically specify what device you want, and then you can choose that it can run on actual quantum hardware as well. Any questions at all about anything on anything in the course or on quantum machine learning? Okay, I'll get the screen down for just a few minutes then. And feel free to ask some questions while that's getting set up if you have any. Or maybe Cole has a new idea for what we can use machine learning for.
Quantum neural networks and machine learning. I wrote this like paper thing for an undergraduate artificial intelligence course.
Oh, cool.
I'll send it to you. I don't know how good it is.
Oh, cool. Nice. Was it on like these variational circuits or?
No, I think probably, but I was more looking at like the algorithm speedups that we get from certain like quantum operations, because just like linear algebra, like you can do eigenvalue, decomposition and stuff, like with a quadratic speedup, which would be helpful for a lot of like machine learning models and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's just an entirely algorithmic speedup.
Yeah, cool. You can bring those types of questions too to the lecture with Roger on Thursday, because he's really aware of like all the different applications that these things could be used for. So that'll be like a really good thing to ask him about too.
Is the quantum machine learning at all, or?
I think, I mean, it's not the main, his, the main focus of his group is more the first bubble that I talked about, but I think some of his collaborations are touching on that too. Sure, yeah. Other questions? Okay, so this is just the website pennylane.ai. Pennylane is a really great, as you see it says here, it's a great Python library for programming quantum computers and quantum devices. They say train a quantum computer the same way as a neural network. But what's really cool about their website is that in addition to just documenting how you use different functions within their library, they also have a whole like learning section where it teaches you about many different concepts in quantum machine learning. So they divide this into sections. For example, if you want to learn some things about quantum computing, quantum machine learning, quantum chemistry, they have all these different sections. So for us, maybe we want to today think about quantum machine learning. You can open this up. It'll start with, you know, okay, maybe the first thing you want to know is what is quantum machine learning? So I mean, I tried to answer that question for you today, but they also kind of break this down in different ways of what it means to use a quantum computer like a neural network, how you can use their library for that. So they break this down into these nice digestible pieces. They also have what I really like, this great section on key concepts. So for example, I told you very briefly about these parameter shift rules. They have a whole page on this, but you know, something that you could expect to read and understand within an, I don't know, I don't want to give an amount of time, but you know, it's not too long. So they really kind of take out the key points that you need if you're trying to understand that concept, and they have a whole list here. So that's really great. And then they also have different demos, so tutorials that you can look at to learn how to use their library and figure out how to do different tasks, for example, in quantum machine learning. I'll just show you a few of those, but really I encourage you to just explore this on your own, and we're going to look at the tutorial we'll do on next week on Tuesday is going to be just adapted from one of these tutorials to just give you kind of some specific things to look at. So these are maybe some of the ones they recommend that you do first to learn just about how their libraries work, how they treat qubits, different operations that you can do, and different types of circuits that you can study. But then once you kind of understand the basics, you can go do some exciting things. And I think some of these tutorials are even based on results from papers that they then adapt into tutorials. So again, I think working through all of this would again be like equivalent to a course in itself, or maybe even more than a PSI course in itself. But I just want, and of course we're not going to go through everything, but I just wanted to highlight all of these different resources in addition to the ones that I listed before that are more textbooks. I think learning some of this stuff, especially if you want to know how to implement it, this is a really great resource for that. Even if you're going to use something else or you're not programming, they still have a lot of great resources to help you learn. So I just wanted to kind of show that, and we'll look at that more in the tutorial. But yeah, are there any questions about any of this or comments, what you find most exciting? I don't know, anything you want to say. Okay, well, let's leave it there then. And I'll send you guys an email kind of summarizing all these important reminders about next week's lectures and sending out the next homework for you all, and I'll see you next week then.